Welcome to the America's Jobs Team podcast. Every week, we dive deep with economic development professionals on leadership and other issues challenging our industry. Our goal is to equip listeners with the knowledge to grow their impact and influence. You are America's Jobs Team, and when you get stronger, communities thrive. I'm so glad you're tuning in today for another episode of America's Jobs Team. I'm Faye Davis, and today I get to talk with RJ Ball, who is the Senior Director of Industry Development and Foreign Trade at the Empire State Development Corporation. RJ is a top 50 awardee this year, so he's part of our North America's top 50 economic developers, and he's really establishing a name for himself as a go-to person for anything related to New York State. RJ talks a little bit about this specifically when he dives into his personal nature to always be helpful. And throughout the conversation, RJ talks about his passion for learning and how that has been incredibly pivotal in the various roles that he has had throughout his career. Let's listen in. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the America's Jobs Team podcast. I am here today with RJ Ball, who is, let me get this right. He is the Senior Director of Industry Development and Foreign Trade at the Empire State Development Corporation. Wow. That is, yeah. It's a mouthful. It's long. It's awesome. RJ, you think you're going to be in the best position here to tell me, what does your role look like and how did you get to where you are?
Sure. So first, thank you for having me. And I'm looking to add a couple of more words to that title at some point, right? Maybe like aging senior director or something of that nature. So I told my wife that we'll probably talk about how did you get to become an economic developer. And she was like, are they going to have like an 8-part series on this? Because that's probably how much time you'll need.
And did you tell her, no, it's got to be like a Cliff Notes version?
Yeah, exactly. So I'll give you the really fast version. And then please, if you want to ask any questions, feel free. So I grew up in a very small suburb of Buffalo, New York, and things were very much sort of, your path forward was sort of laid out for you. And it was very typical. When I left high school, the expectation was, you know, you go on to get your bachelor's degree and then possibly a graduate degree. And by the time I graduated high school, I think what I found out now is that maybe I wasn't feeling challenged. And I think I was growing impatient with being in the classroom. And I worked so many jobs, mostly off the books, as you know, starting as a 14-year-old. And I wanted to get to work, and I always felt like I had a lot to offer, and I wasn't really sure how to do that. So I did start off enrolling in one of the universities that I had been accepted to. But ultimately, I decided that the best thing for me at the time was to move to New York City and maybe try something different. And so when I was about 18 years old, I moved to New York City. I decided to leave the university that I was at. And I went there, not really sure exactly what I would do, but, you know, I felt like offering hard work was going to work out for me. And I ultimately ended up working on political campaigns in New York City. I started off doing all of the, you know, quote unquote grunt work, which by the way, I'm not opposed to doing to this day. And that kind of took off. You know, I started as the low man on a campaign in 1997, and I just started getting more opportunities to do that. By 2002, I had worked myself into a position where I was running campaigns, and then at the end of 2002, I ultimately accepted a position as a chief of staff for an assemblyman whose campaign I ran in New York. So I worked in the New York State Assembly for a while. I'll try to give the short version. I moved for a new opportunity in Baltimore, where they were revamping the city council in Baltimore. And after that, I moved for another opportunity to South Florida, where I worked for John Kerry on his campaign was doing operations in Palm Beach County, which coming off of the Bush v. Gore election in 2000, Palm Beach County was certainly a place of great focus.
Yeah.
So it seemed like an exciting opportunity, which it was. And after that, I spent a small amount of time in the Florida State Legislature as I was hired by a state senator who I had worked with on the Kerry campaign. And I ultimately ended up leaving that for an opportunity in the private sector doing business development. Business development, oddly enough, was the one thing I had never done. I always thought of myself as a deal maker. And, I read this job posting one night and it looked like maybe it would be interesting. So I did that. I had, I think, a pretty good deal of success there. And in 2008, when the housing market crashed, certainly South Florida was one of the hardest hit places. I saw everyone around me really kind of falling apart. And it was disheartening. But I always try to look for where the opportunities are in things. And I decided at that point that that was the right time for me to pursue my education, because it was something that had always been in the back of my mind. So I ended up enrolling at Florida Atlantic University. I finished my bachelor's degree, I think, in just a little over a year and a half. It's a conducive setup down there if you want to do things quickly. I don't spend that much time sleeping, so I kind of wanted to do things in an overwhelming way. Because it's Florida, you can take a full schedule of classes all year round. You don't have to take a quote unquote summer break unless it gets right. too hot for you.
Yeah. Yeah, but when it gets too hot, it might be nice to sit in a classroom where it's air conditioned, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's the best, for my purposes, it's the best school in the world. And I had an amazing experience there. And of course, because of my newfound interest in wanting to do business development as a profession, I did the natural thing and went for my English literature degree, because makes perfect sense,
yes.
right? So following that, I was accepted into a couple of law schools. I enrolled in law school. I got a hard and fast training in how much I never wanted to become a lawyer. And then I ultimately moved back to Buffalo just about a year and a half after Governor Cuomo was elected. Folks that I have been connected to for most of my life in his administration, I was having conversations with them, and the idea of coming to ESD, Empire State Development, came up. I admittedly did not know what Empire State Development was when this came up. And they said, basically, you're trying to talk to businesses about how great it would be for them to do business in New York State. And, the only product I've ever been interested in selling is New York State. I feel like I could sell anything. I feel like I have the ultimate job security, because I could just go sell something if something else didn't work out. And I think I'd be successful doing that. But New York State is my passion. I mean, I love Buffalo, New York, where I grew up, where I live now. I loved every minute that I lived in New York City. I was never a person that left because I was dissatisfied with what the state or my community was offering. It was just much more opportunities came up in a strange way, and curiosity, which I think is super important, just got the best of me.
RJ, I'm gonna interject right there real quick, because what you are saying is actually one of my, it plays into one of the questions I wanted to ask you, because what I'm hearing from you is you are a person, you go hard, you go fast, and you are all in for what you do between the campaigns that you've worked on and now it being in economic development. And you're saying that you know, you're passionate about New York State, and it doesn't feel like you, what I'm hearing is it doesn't feel like you have to sell it because you believe in it so much. And I wanted to ask you, for the role that you are in, the types, and there's certain types of training and skills that are needed. What do you think is your strongest skill in your role, in what you are doing right here, right now, that makes you so good at what you're doing?
Yeah. So I think there's two things. I think my strongest skill is also my biggest weakness, which is impatience. I'm completely impatient. And I think that companies love that because however fast they think they want to move, I want to move faster. I have such an interesting experience working within the bureaucracy of state government that I really know how to navigate it, I think, quickly. And I'm just very, very impatient. And of course, that's also my biggest weakness, which I think has been exploited during the pandemic, for sure, because, you know, trying to develop some patience has been a little bit important. And then I think the other thing is that if you start a question to me saying, can you help me? The answer is yes. That's all you need to know. The answer is yes. Can I help you? I absolutely can help you. I have the kind of mind that retains things that seem utterly useless, but every single one of those things ultimately materializes into an opportunity for someone, right? Mm-hmm. Most often, I'm just the facilitator. It's not my own opportunistic view, but if you start the question that way, can you help me with, the answer is yes. I don't even need to hear the rest of the question. I will figure it out. And I think that's my greatest strength.
I love that. I absolutely love that. And I can relate because here on our team, I was just saying this like a week and a half ago, somebody came to me with like a super, super random, Faye, can you help me figure this out? And I'm like, yes, I can, because I store like the most random bits of information really far in the back of my brain. And then I'll usually help people. And then I'm like, I don't even know why I know that. Like, why do I know that? I don't know.
Right.
I don't
know. But, right.
But I know it. So it sounds like you are in that same boat. And it's a great skill to have because people know that they can come to you. So in economic development, you probably get contacted by people when they need information or need to be connected to someone like, hey, RJ, can you help me figure out who's leading on this, this, and this? Am I correct?
Right. Right. Absolutely. I mean, it can be anything. I mean, I've had everything from, I need a person that has this one random skill that five people in the world probably have. And I'm like, oh yeah, I know that person, I need to know who to talk to at the state liquor authority as I open my business here, or, you know, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, it can be anything. And I've had friends and colleagues suggest that I often back myself into a corner with these things, but that's kind of where I prefer to be, right? Mm-hmm. Fighting my way out of the corner. Because I know that there's an answer, and I know that there's an answer that's not as complicated as most people might think. And like you were saying, I mean, the question I get all the time is, how do you know that? I don't know how I know that.
I don't know.
I picked it up somewhere, but I'm going to go to those recesses of my brain and I'm going to hand you exactly what you need here.
Yeah. RJ, I have a question for you. And the more I talk with you, the more I'm starting to feel like this might actually not be as much of a challenge for you specifically, but we hear from economic developers all the time that this ever increasing pace of work, right? It's just grinding your gears. 2020 has kicked it up a notch. It sounds like you thrive in an environment like that, but everybody has to be careful about burning the candle at both ends. So what do you do to manage your energy? Like, how do you stay motivated and keep a healthy balance between that intensity of work?
Yeah. So anyone that knows me knows that I don't have a healthy balance when it comes to intensity. So I think I probably had the realization when I was 12 or 13 that I said this to my wife, and she thought I was being funny, but my destiny is to burn out, to burn out hard, right? That's what's going to happen at some point. I don't know how it's gone this long. I don't know why, but that's ultimately what's going to happen to me. And somehow or another, I'm okay with that. I have 4-year-old twin boys, and actually we had a daughter in the pandemic in June. But when my
congratulations,
thank you. When my boys finally started sleeping, I have this constant need to get better and to learn. I can't accept going to a meeting and having someone talk about something that I can understand on the surface, but I don't understand deep down. So when my boys started sleeping through the night, because that, you know, that first 6 months was a challenge, that's when I enrolled to get my MBA. And I enrolled in a very intense 18-month MBA program. So, you know, everything was, it was intense. It was very intense. But it's like, I go to sleep at night, and that lasts about 40 minutes before some neuron in my brain shoots astray and my eyes pop open. And now I'm thinking about something. And it lasts about a half hour before I have to turn thinking into doing. And so, yeah, sleep has never been my strong suit. But, you know, I also, people would say I'm very intense. So I certainly don't come off as I'm kind of dragging my way through life because I'm not getting, you know, the sleep or nourishment that I need. And I don't know, I think that's why early on I was successful in campaign politics, because the expectation was, you know, give us all of yourself all the time for very little in return. But that was actually really well tailored to my personality. You know, just keep going. And so I don't know if it ends with, you know, I'm 42 now, maybe at 45, I just have the ultimate burnout and I can't function anymore. Or maybe I get another 30 years out of this before that happens, or maybe it doesn't happen at all. I don't know. But I
think a lot of it is mindset too, right? Like a lot of people, burnout happens when they can't handle the workload that they are experiencing. And you are a person that thrives off of it. You seek it. You seek to be engaged and pushed. And like you said, fighting yourself out of a corner. So, and for some people that works really well. I want to end with this one last question.
I couldn't be your counselor if you're trying to figure out what work-life balance.
You're like, but, do more.
What do you mean? Yeah. Just create more hours in the day. You're sleeping too much.
You're like, sleep
you
less.
You need 5 hours to survive.
Oh my gosh. Well, RJ, I'm going to end on this one last question, because you have talked a lot about the different educational opportunities you've taken advantage of. And part of this industry is it's a fast paced and it's a quick changing industry. How are you investing in your personal development, right? Like, where do you go? What do you listen to podcasts? Obviously conferences are not a thing right now, but how do you continue to invest in your own knowledge and leadership in the economic development industry?
Yeah. I mean, I will look for education under every rock. When I feel like I'm not learning in my job anymore, I will move on to a new job. I've joked with my wife, maybe I'll go to medical school at some point or something, because I just to make sure I don't stop learning, right? But the best thing about being an economic developer is it's like you have a new job every day, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, there's always something new to learn. But yeah, I mean, I go to school when I can. You know, I'll take advantage of a degree or a certificate program, podcasts for sure. When the popular topic of the day, it seems so long ago, but it was probably like 8 weeks ago, was quote unquote court packing. I went back and started reading and listening to podcasts about Marbury versus Madison, because I was so frustrated that, you know, that this term was flying around when people, I think, don't understand the genesis of the Supreme Court. And that's a podcast for a different day. But yeah, I mean, I will look for it anywhere in any form. And of course, the default is if you feel utterly confused, you can go ahead and listen to Bob Dylan for 20 minutes and it seems to be cleared up.
Yes. What a better way to end this podcast than that, RJ. That is excellent advice. I want to say thank you for your time and for your
your
candid conversation and your super interesting life. I appreciate it. And again, congratulations on being a top 50 awardee. It is so well deserved. I can totally see why you are a shining star where you are.
Thank you so much. And thank you so much for the award. It's really nice to have somebody say, hey, you're doing a good job.
Thanks for sticking with us to the very end. And again, a huge thank you to our sponsors, Research on Investment and Gazelle AI. The America's Jobs Team podcast releases episodes every week that are specifically curated for economic developers like you looking to stay in the know about industry trends, leadership development, career management, growing high-performing organizations, and so much more. So don't forget to subscribe. You can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Amazon Podcasts, or really any other preferred podcast outlet that you use. America's Jobs Team is audio engineered by Joshua Wieters and produced by Faye Davis.